Mequano Coffee Roasters,
mequanocoffee.com,
coming to you live, and by that we mean recorded in advance, from Gut Check World Headquarters in the capital city of a boxing glove-shaped state, and Gut Check South Command, deep in the belly button above the buckle of the Bible Belt, it's the Gut Check Press Podcast, with your hosts, Ted Kluck and Zachary Bartles.
Hey, welcome to the Gut Check Podcast.
I was going to do it on my last name.
I can't, though. Hey, welcome to the Gut Check Podcast. I'm Ted Kluck, joined as always. I can't do it. In studio by my good friend, my partner in radio. My partner in a certain kind of joke, Zachary Bartle. Zach, we're back in the studio. We're doing full-time radio work this morning. We're doing a regular ep and a Patreon.
Full-time and, 56 minutes.
Full-time meaning 56 minutes a week, which is probably about what the American like work from home worker does now, you know. So
well, with some breaks for all self-care and mental health, you know, awareness.
That's right. Stuff. Yeah, yeah. Now that we're all living that dream, you know, and that's going so well for everyone. But Zach, it's good to be back in the studio with you. It's good to be doing full-time radio work, and it's good to be reflecting on how much people seem to be enjoying the new outro music that you've been using, which was a brand new production of our two boys.
Yeah, the whole Maxie time you guys were in Lansing, they were in Calvin's room making music.
Yeah.
And they made that song.
They were in their own studio, man, like us. They're studio guys.
Gut Check Records.
Yeah. Gut Check Records. They're studio guys. We need to keep that plate spinning, develop that idea a little bit. I've always wanted to own a record label, so we will keep pulling on that string a little bit. And I was at church the other day, and half my church listens to our podcast. They're a congregation of huge Gut Check fans. And I had a guy come up to me, a guy I don't know well. His name's Andrew, and he was just like, "Hey, just want to let you know, like, the song you guys are using at the end of the program, like, you know, it's really gotten in my head." And this guy's a bass player.
Wow.
He's like, whenever I listen to it, he's like, I write my own bass lines to it, you know, and I'm like, oh man, that's great. And I got to tell him that our boys did it, and he was super impressed. And yeah, it was great, man. It was a nice moment.
That is awesome. And I think it was great that we didn't ask them to do that. They were just like, what should we make next? How about another outro for the Gut Check Podcast?
I love it. They're creative guys, Zach. The apple didn't fall far from the tree, let's just say. And, you know, I feel more and more comfortable with our succession plan as a company, just handing off the keys to these boys at some point. But, Zach, we have a lot of writing and a lot of radio left in us. We are in no way nearing retirement.
We're just getting started. We're just getting started on the...
Oh man, I don't know how you feel about it. We're gonna have to cut all this out. It's a really weird joke in that, like, I want to do it all the time.
Yes.
Like, there's like never a moment when I don't want to be doing it.
There's all these wasted opportunities during the day. You're like, if I was with different people, this would be the best moment. Right.
Exactly. I'm with.
You know what must be really annoying to the average Gut Check listener, especially patrons this past week? An episode that's just like, it cuts to a bleep and then it comes back to us laughing like it's just the funniest thing in the world just happened. Tyler Noblet wrote on the Patreon this morning, the Michael Scott quote, "I love inside jokes. I'd like to be part of one someday." And I responded with, "The beautiful thing about the beeps is whatever you are imagining," we said, "is definitely 10 times funnier than this joke we've been beating into the ground."
That's true.
To the average person, anyway. To us, nothing's funnier.
To us, nothing's funnier. Exactly. Exactly. Zach, I had a, I don't know if funny's the right word, but it was illuminating and it was interesting. I had an experience last night where... I don't know if when you were at Cornerstone, they probably had something like this. We have something at our university called the Honors Community, which is basically like just another way to recruit like a nerdier type of freshman. And by and large, the students in the Honors Community aren't like qualitatively any different than the students across the rest of campus, but they take like a little different like palette of classes and they do different, you know, opportunities and they think of themselves as different. But they invited me, so the honors professors invited me to be a part of a panel discussion about the new Ethan and Maya Hawke movie Wildcat. My question to you is, are you okay? Yeah, are you familiar with it at all?
No, although I did just see the Ethan Hawke Uma Thurman's son in a movie, and I didn't know about him until then. But no, I haven't.
He was in this for a minute. He was in it for only a couple of minutes, and he's unspeakably handsome, as you would imagine.
Good actor too.
You know, a child.
Yeah.
Good actor too. Unspeakably handsome. But Wildcat is this super arty kind of navel gazing biopic ish thing about the Southern Gothic novelist Flannery O'Connor.
Oh, I love Flannery O'Connor.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so interesting. I don't not love Flannery O'Connor. I think I pretended to like her when I was trying to impress KK in my early 20s. And when I was trying to be like kind of early 20s lit boy, you know, and in reality, I just thought her stuff was...
Lit boy? You know what joke I want to make right now, but I can't.
Oh, I know it, dude. Yeah. Back when I thought, like, I don't know, being weird and depressing was the only way to be like a thoughtful person. But
wait, it's not?
Anyway, so yeah, exactly. I was the token like film guy on the panel, but I was also the token like Baptist Rube in that a large part of the Flannery O'Connor kind of excitement is like being the only smart person surrounded by rubes. You know, that was like a big part of the experience for her, and I think for her fans. And so it was strange for me to be the token kind of Baptist Rube on this panel discussion, but also the token film guy. But the interesting part was I'd been telling KK for years about kind of how do I say this in a radio appropriate way? Academic kind of posturing. You know, an academic like swinging it around. And so we had dinner with the panel, and then she came and watched the panel. And at the end, she was like, "You know that thing you've been telling me about how academics posture?" I'm like, "Yeah." She's like, "It's real." And I'm like, "I know." So my question to you is, yeah, tell me about your Flannery O'Connor stuff. Any experiences with like academic posturing? Or any of that you think is interesting? Maybe none of it's interesting.
I would need some specifics on the academic posturing to see if it's anything I can relate to. Yeah. And I don't know how specific you can get without like shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah, and implicating people. Exactly. Yeah. It's just sort of like, you know how when, I guess like normal people are at dinner, I don't know, you talk about like your kids or like sports or like just life or whatever. I think when academics are at dinner, they talk about like what papers they've read and who they've heard speak at conferences. And it's like this little subtle game of like one-upsmanship. And in this particular crowd, it was a little subtle game of like who's kind of more liberal and enlightened. And the references got, you know, a little bit more and more on the nose as the dinner went along. And it was just a really funny thing to be like a fly on the wall for. And it was one of those moments where like, and this is where the complication comes in for me, because I both disliked it and also really liked it. Like it was really entertaining. And so I sort of
wanted to mock it, like, but also be part of it every week.
Yeah, kind of, dude. And that was the weird thing. So I felt like I was both like dishonoring my heritage, you know, like I feel
your
like
German heritage.
Kind of, that's right. You look at me, all you see is a filthy German. And I know that about you. Cause all I see is a Dutchman when I look at you. Funny enough, I mentioned that at the table last night and everybody looked at me like I was a horrible person. You know, I shared this anecdote about my filthy, cheap Dutch friend, Zach, and they were all really offended. You know.
Well, they would be all right probably mocking someone of white Euro extraction, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, right. Yeah,
who else exactly. can we mock, right? I'm on the table.
You are, and to be fair, everyone around the table was of white Euro extraction.
Oh, yeah.
Still safe to mock.
Looking like a HuffPo board meeting over there, probably, huh?
It was like a HuffPo board meeting. Exactly. Oh, man. Yeah. Anyway, I didn't know you were a Flannery O'Connor guy. Talk about that.
I feel... So I read a lot of Flannery O'Connor in high school. I was in we made up classes to not have to take real classes. A lot of them had the word independent at the beginning of them, and you just had to get a teacher to like agree that this is a thing. And so it was like,
That's awesome.
Oh, it was awesome, dude. I had no real classes my senior year, at least my last semester.
Oh my gosh.
None.
What a great little deal, dude.
Independent reading, independent creative writing. Independent music. I mean, we did all these things. Mm-hmm. And at one point, I think it was in independent creative writing, I was talking about short stories and the kind of short stories I wanted to write, which I think were probably basically like I wanted to write short stories that were all the little pieces that made up Pulp Fiction, which I had just watched and loved.
Yeah.
And my teacher, who is a college professor, and I just actually saw and had a long conversation with 2 months ago, said, "Well, cool. Sounds like Flannery O'Connor, and you should read some of these." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, it's the best thing I've ever read." I read quite a bit of Flannery O'Connor, and then kind of just for. By the way, all the while thinking Flannery was a dude. And then kind of forgot about it, and then in college, I had a prof who was a bit of a devotee and loaned me I haven't found anywhere else, but kind of a reader of actually excerpts of some longer works and you know, some essays and stuff. Erin has read I think she wrote like a book on writing that was also wrapped in with a kind of Christian, you know, Catholic worldview and stuff. I've not read that.
Interesting. Yeah.
What's funny is
I didn't know
this,
that existed.
Neither had I until she told me about it. But like, what's funny is this description of an extended academic meal where the bragging gets more and more on the nose, and the politics turn more and more strident. If it was just a little more dark and unsettling, it sounds like a Flannery O'Connor story to me.
It actually does. Yeah. So someone in the story would have to be. Oh, it would be me. I would be the horrible Baptist Rube in the story who gets like, you know, run over by a car or like struck by lightning or like burned alive or something, you know, like that would be my fate at the end of the story.
A lot of them have a lot of grace and redemption in them, dude. But maybe not the most well-known, but that was a great moment of realization. Yeah. You just need somebody it would be me.
Yeah. You need somebody to have like one arm and get, you know, like run over by a tractor. Wait a minute. That would be me.
Look down. Do you have both arms right now, Ted?
Exactly. Dude, no, but the one-armed man in... So the way this movie was set up structurally, and this is really boring for our listeners. I'll keep this short. And then I have another like Sherlock Holmes thing to discuss. But... There was a one-armed man in the movie, and it was our guy Steve Zahn, dude.
Oh, I love Steve Zahn, especially dramatic Steve Zahn, sad Steve Zahn.
Yeah, dude, dramatic sad Steve Zahn is exactly what this was. He was only in the movie for like 12 minutes, but it ripped. So, yeah, the way the movie was set up structurally was it was kind of this plotless character study thing where there were just like six vignettes that were pieces of Flannery O'Connor's stories in which Maya Hawke always plays the kind of Flannery O'Connor character in the stories. And then Laura Linney always plays her oppressive, depressing mom, which is so perfect for Laura Linney. Laura Linney movies should come with a warning label. Like she's a first ballot depressing movie Hall of Famer.
But she always has that vacant smile. So it sometimes catches off guard. Dude. Yeah.
That vacant smile is a bit of a deal. And she had it in a lot of these, but, yeah, no. So It was the same characters playing, or the same actors playing different characters on all these vignettes, which was kind of cool and kind of clever.
Sounds like a good movie to me. Did you like it?
Well, no. I mean, it's not the kind of movie you like. It's a film. Yeah, it's a film, not a movie. You know, I mean, it's a kind of an awards bait goatee stroker. Not really. You're never like. Stroker. You're like, hey, babe, we're at a hotel room and the last 20 minutes of Wildcat is on cable. You want to stay, be a little late for dinner and catch the last 20 minutes? It's not that kind of thing. you know, if we catch the last 20 minutes, we could see her die of lupus, you know.
And then I mean, a speedboat chase.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird. It turns into Miami Vice the last 20 minutes. It's crazy. Yeah.
All the shots are like burn notice where they're like quick exactly. Establishing shot of a marina, then a butt in a bikini, yeah. And then Flannery O'Connor. Yeah, right.
Some people playing beach volleyball. You know, it's crazy the turn it takes in the third act.
Somebody needs to just edit that together. They can change the whole tenor of the thing.
Dude, yeah, cut together a pastiche of like burn notice and Flannery O'Connor's Wildcat. Oh my gosh, dude.
So, you have Sam Axe in the background with mojitos in every scene.
I would probably pay somebody like $75 to cut that together. That would be amazing. Dude, there was one last movie thing I wanted to mention that I know you're going to love. And it's that our guy Liam Neeson is in it for like 5 minutes as a hot priest.
Yes. And not I know for the you first like time. Like
Yeah, I know you like interesting priest stuff, and he's there, and he's got the clerical collar popped, and he looks awesome.
How does one is the clerical collar pretty much always popped? I mean,
yeah, it's pretty much always popped, you know.
or is that what you mean when you say popped? You mean they popped out the tab and got a little bit more comfortable?
yeah, he popped out the tab was there. The tab is key, dude. The tab is like the key to the whole thing. You know, if you pop out the tab, you're just like a regular guy again.
Right, you know, yeah, you're like showing Clark, that you're you Clark know, just Kent one of the
with his
boys.
Glasses on. Yeah, you're showing you're just one of the boys, man of the people, man of the cloth, man of the people. That's right. Zach, we had an experience last week, and it was a great experience in which I was working in my office. KK went to check the mail. She brought me in the tiniest little package. It was like smaller than even the size of a normal envelope, and it appeared to come from Pizza King Corporate. For the uninitiated, Pizza King is a pizza chain that's situated really just in Indiana. I think it started in Indiana. There may be a few up in Michigan, but it's my all-time favorite pizza in the world. It was like the one restaurant in my town, an empty factory that has survived and thrived. They have changed it 0% since I was in high school. All the same stuff is there. And so I open this package from Pizza King Corporate, and it's got little pieces of Pizza King swag in it. So I got two stickers, which are now on my laptop, and then I got a Pizza King poker chip, which is now out in the smoke room with my other like cards and poker supplies. And dude, I have to tell you, I was delighted. And I immediately texted you a picture of the swag. And I said, did you send me this? Because it seemed like the kind of thoughtful thing that you would do. And you said no. And then you said, I got a shipment of Jolt Cola swag. So yeah. Talk to me about what you got. And then we'll kind of get the you know corkboard out and sleuth this thing together with some skeins of yarn.
It sort of seems to be like a... it was from a particular printer who was like sending out kind of abandonware type product stuff. Okay. Okay. And cool. Like I'd say parody products, you know. So it mm-hmm. was a bunch of stickers, like six of them were Jolt logos. Mm-hmm. One of them is on my laptop right now. Sadly, there was mm-hmm. a little note on the envelope that said that it was not like weather treated, don't put it on your car. And I was like, dang, I would love to put this on my car.
Dude, that's a clue though, because whoever wrote that note is a very thoughtful person, because they know they've been with the show a long time. They probably heard your journey with like bumper stickers. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Go on. Continue.
Yeah, put that on the corkboard.
Put it on the corkboard.
With it was like Chuck E. Cheese sticker, but like it had like something semi-dirty instead of Chuck E. Cheese. Like I feel like the person who ordered these for me ordered the Jolt stickers. They came to me along with like a small sampler of the other kind of stuff that this printer does. That was the impression
and
I got.
Were, Yeah, and there were some like off-color ones in there. Was there, oh man, and this would be amazing given what we talked about a few weeks ago. Were there any images of like a hastily drawn Calvin like peeing on anything?
Sadly, no. No.
And by Calvin, I mean not John Calvin. Although, but, dude.
Calvin, what about this? Calvin and Hobbes fame. Yeah.
What about this for a sticker line? Calvin peeing on something, but instead of cartoon Calvin, it's John Calvin.
And he's peeing on Servetus's ashes.
Or peeing on like a stack of Brian McLaren books, or I mean, you could go a lot of directions with it, but I don't know. It's something we should kick the tires on, maybe.
We can't get sued by anyone because John Calvin's dead. So yeah, his likeness is exactly. Fair game. Yeah,
dude, fair game. I mean, this could be a financial windfall for us. I mean,
akin to all the others.
Yeah, it's exactly. Akin to the fact that everything we touch in this company turns to gold. I mean, this could just be another one of those instances, you know.
Dude, speaking of Sherlock Holmes here, and obviously we're gonna ask if you would step forward, just let us know, or better yet, drop some breadcrumbs of clues so that we can solve the mystery.
Absolutely, yeah.
As of now, it's kind of at an impasse. But like, I also wanted to mention that, and I wish I could remember who. But somebody on Patreon was asking if the professor that you're kind of in a feud with had been considered as the potential thief of the cane. And I hadn't even thought to bring that up.
Zach, for the life of me, I don't remember the professor that I'm in a feud with. What did I mention that alluded to this?
Gosh.
And that'll help me remember who the professor... Yeah, I mean... it might have been something I said 4 years ago.
No, this was like within the past 6 months.
Oh, interesting. Who would I have been feuding with?
If you could solve that, maybe it'll help you solve the crime.
If I could solve that, maybe I can, I can.
This is classic Ted, though. You've put out of mind any negative thoughts you had about this person. And
I have.
And literally, you can't remember.
Here's what happened, probably, with the person who I maybe was feuding with. I'm sure I went to coffee with them and discovered that they were a lovely person. And to your point, I've completely forgotten it. Because that's usually my, how it works with nemeses on campus. Interesting. Yeah. Well, we'll keep sleuthing, Zach, needless to say. And we're going to sleuth out, hopefully, who sent us all this great swag. But I didn't even know Pizza King had merch. And
I'm delighted. So it did say, I'm sorry to interrupt. It did say on the return address, like Pizza King corporate headquarters. Yeah. It wasn't like from some, Etsy shop or something.
Yeah, no, it said Pizza King. Oh, this is a clue. Although this guy I don't think is a listener to Gut Check. It said Pizza King merchandise, 4111 North Wheeling Ave, Muncie, Indiana. Now, Muncie is the town like 20 minutes away from my town. And I don't think Pizza King originated in Muncie, but it might have. I mean, maybe Pizza King corporate is there. Or maybe the person who ordered this for me lives in or near Muncie, which would be fascinating. And that would narrow it down to a few people. I've eliminated my parents because I sent the picture to my dad thinking, oh, maybe Pop's like pulled the trigger on some Pizza King merch for me. And he was like, nope, wasn't me. I have a friend who lives in Muncie who I'm pretty sure isn't a listener. Oh, this is interesting. Now, what was the return address on yours?
It was the print shop. I don't remember what it was called.
The print shop. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Well, more work to do, Zach. More detective work to do for you and me.
Can I suggest a turn in the program here, Ted, that we hadn't planned on? And maybe even like gobbling up our patron time and giving the patrons like 3 or 4 chapters of something to listen to this week.
Sure.
I was just thinking we should talk about and get it on the record our upcoming serialized fiction podcast within a podcast that we spent a good deal of time. Let me give the backstory real quick.
And
I have been wanting to for a while write something together again because we've had a lot of fun every time we've done that. And I randomly had an idea for a YA book called Vicarious Darius. based on, and that basically just came out of my mind. I always try to churn out band names, you know. By the way, the other day I had a great idea. The Scumbeams.
Oh, nice. That's good. Yeah, but, that's really good.
But Curious Darius is a kid in middle school who only does things online. He plays all his games online. He talks to all his friends online. He visits his place online. He doesn't do anything in real life. And then he accidentally does something against his will, maybe, or just you know, in the spur of the moment. And he loves it so much, mm-hmm. he swears off all the online stuff. And uh-huh. the idea was that he would eventually... he'd be blogging about all this, right? Like, and the name of the blog would be Vicarious Darius. Other kids would get inspired and follow him. And eventually he'd realize that even blogging was like faking, like online making a newspaper, and he would resurrect the school newspaper. And you and I were talking about whether that might be a fun thing for for the next iteration of Gut Check Literacy Month. And I think I put the bullet in the head of it thinking, like, why would we do, like, a YA middle reader book when we have adult, mostly, listeners? And we already have, you know, a series that we've inherited of young reader books that I want to see continue. So why would we, like, dilute that?
That's right.
By the way, hopefully the Caution to the Wind is going to move forward here in 2025. I'd like to.
I would
see
love
that.
I would love it. I've got an edit of it going, and I just need to pick that back up, dude. I mean, I probably, if I worked on that for a week, I could get that manuscript ready to go.
Then we just have to get on like the timeline for Megan Barada.
Yeah, yeah.
If she's willing to do the same thing she did last time with the same arrangement, I mean, I guarantee we can do that pretty easily.
Flex 4 Caution to the Wind is going to be a banger, dude. It's more like an action movie. So I think people are going to have fun with it. That's in the ether. Essay collection we've talked about, but this serialized thing, I think the magic of it, Zach, was for you and me, like, recreating the energy of Re-Raptured, where like getting the chapter via email from each other was like a present that we would unwrap, and then we would have the joy of like writing our own chapter in response. And I don't know, your wife would know more about this. I don't know how like other novelists work who collaborate with each other, but like to me, this is like the funnest way of collaboration.
Oh yeah.
Ever, because it allows like you to be fully you. It allows me to be fully me. We get to kind of send our stuff back and forth, and then we get to like build off of it. And laugh at each other's parts and just have so much fun with it. And then
laugh at
each other's parts. I know that sounded dirty. And then we get something that we can read out loud and extend Gut Check Literacy Month with, which, you know, the month has been going on for like 12 years now.
It's on hiatus now. We're in a different month, but
we're in a different month. It's going to be a new rollout of Gut Check Literacy Month.
2.0. The other thing that would make it different that I was suggesting was, instead of just like us reading it and howling with laughter, we would do like probably back and forth readings, and then I would do some production on it, like I've been doing with my Pilgrim's Progress podcast and my audiobooks. So there'd be some ambiance, there'd be some, you know, not annoying over the top, but some kind of sound effect and music and stuff.
I love it.
You and I went back and forth over Marco. A dozen messages at the very least, and probably totaling, you know, an hour and a half or something. And we kind of took not even really the bones of the idea. We just, it was a springboard, the Darius thing. And we started talking about, well, there was the story of you with the bowling alley that I think for me really kind of clinched what kind of story we're telling. Which is a story that takes, like, if you watched it happen, you wouldn't even know you were watching a story. But for That's you right. to narrate, maybe you should just quickly tell it.
Yeah, so this happened this summer. So as I was driving either up toward you guys or back home, I spent a couple days with my parents, and my dad indicated to me that the bowling alley and adjacent bar in my town were for sale. And for like 20, 30 minutes, dude, I fully ran it in my mind. Where I quit my academic job, I sell our house down here, and I just buy the bowling alley in my hometown and the bar, and I become Sam Malone, and I run the bar, I run the bowling alley, and like I sat there like wistfully thinking about it for like 20 minutes, and then I was like, wait a minute, I love my job down here, I love my church, I love my house, like that would be insane, but for those 20 minutes, it felt like the most perfect and magical and right thing ever to do. But then cooler heads prevailed. So I told this anecdote to you, and this is where, this is the magic of like two creative people being in a room. And by in a room, I mean via Marco Polo, like a couple of old ladies. so I told this idea to you, and then you immediately kind of lighted on this image of, what if we have our main character be a little older? What if he goes to his hometown? What if he has the same experience with, you know, his kind of crumbling hometown paper? And this guy would have had some kind of career as a quote unquote journalist, but as journalism kind of, you know, goes the way of tweeting and you know, clickbait and sound bites, you know, he has this deeply unsatisfying kind of but successful life in it, but then he decides, you know what, I want to write real stories about real people and cover real things. And then something like inciting incident wise brings him back home. And then he ends up buying his hometown paper. And I think in true Ted and Zach fashion, this story is going to involve some espionage, some hot priests, some like gunplay, some fights, you know, some
and then
humor.
Eventually get really like, sweet at the end.
Yes, whimsical. And then like the last 20 pages are going to get really sweet. It's going to turn into a Hallmark movie. Yeah, and I absolutely can't wait because that's like a thing that I love doing. And it's going to be the writing project that I go to for fun. And I'm so ready for it. And so where it is now is we've kind of hashed out the parameters. I think you're going to take a crack at a preface or a prologue or a first chapter, or however you want to do it.
Dude, I've already written and I almost sent it to you. And then I thought maybe it'd be good podcast content. I've already written a treatment, a version of the moment that he sees that he makes the decision. And I really want, and I left a big gap in it for like the internal monologue. So you can kind of fill in like where your head went, but the whole thing it takes place. So it's a small town and he left small town, went to Chicago, quote unquote made it, but in a really unsatisfying way. And it's a coming home story. It's a reconnecting with friends who for a while, you know, for decades now looked up to him, or a decade and a half as the guy who got out and went to the big city. Now he's back, you know, probably the girl that he had a crush on, you know, whatever, all that fun stuff. And I, as I saw it, I think as you saw it, is this doesn't have to be like a novel with three acts. This is episodic. So we can take, you know, story arcs and it can go in different weird directions. It doesn't have any rules. But he's in the small town and talking on the phone with his 23-year-old boss, Draven, about, you know, staying here for a while, working remotely, and he just, in a rage, will quit at a blinking red light, maybe partway out into the intersection. No one else is in the downtown because it's like 10:40 p.m. And then he just hangs up on him, and he can have the whole internal struggle there in this intersection, and then he can look over and see the shuttered, you know, building for lease sign with the filthy, you know, such and such town, you know, Daily Mail or whatever on sign on top of it. Remember, I don't know, I didn't even just thought of this now. Maybe he did. Maybe he was a paperboy for it, did a little stint as a intern there, learned to love the idea of journalism. And he just, that's the pure thing that he wants for his life then. And you know, know exactly how that feels because you went down there. That's what I've got. It's not long. And I think I can't wait. I kind of want you to hash out the funny details of his Chicago journalism job, because I think you come up with funny, over the top, you know, kind of scenarios.
Yeah, I would absolutely love to do that. I would love nothing more than to do that. So, yeah, dude, if you want to fire away on that thing, and give me a crack at it, I can't wait. And then the chapters will be flying out of us fast and furious.
My other thought was we'd go one a month and probably drop it in the main app, like drop it in the Patreon, and then like a few weeks later, drop it in the main app as one of the monthly episodes. One of the weekly episodes, but one per month, and then also probably drop it into its own feed so that people who aren't Gut Check fans might discover it and just listen to this.
I love that
story.
Yeah, yeah, no, I love it. I love it absolutely. Yeah, and give it all the tags, like, you know, journalism, writing, what have you, and see what kind of audience it brings. No, I love it. Yeah, that's fantastic, dude. And it'll allow us to say some things about journalism, about small towns, about the nature of creative work, and fire off all of our usual jokes.
And midlife crisis stuff is so fun at this point in our lives. Like, I
absolutely, dude.
I love midlife crises. I'd love to be part of one someday. But I think the closest I'll get is just writing about several.
yeah, exactly. And I hope that's the closest we get, you know, to actual midlife crises. But no, dude, I'm so ready for this, and it's going to be awesome. Can't wait.
Well, we had another thing to talk about. What was it?
Let's see. We talked about the Pizza King swag. We talked about my academic panel. We talked about Sherlock Holmes.
I feel like I didn't properly receive your academic panel story, and like, I feel like you pitched it right down the middle, not too fast, and I just didn't swing.
Yeah.
I apologize for that.
Okay,
I don't know why.
No, don't apologize. Don't apologize at all. And I was sitting here feeling like I didn't deliver it well. And in keeping with the baseball analogy, like, I threw a ball in the dirt, and, you know, you had a good eye, and you were wise not to, like, just begin hacking at it, you know, with your little foam and mesh baseball cap situated atop your head and your insouciant sneer on your face as the one in the Little League picture, the picture that we have. I didn't cue that up exactly perfectly, but did you have... At Cornerstone, did you have like an equivalent to like what we call the honors community? Was there like this smug little band of like people who have just had their like humility lobotomized due to being like called honors? Did you have something like that?
No, not that I know of. Maybe. Yeah. I know that like there was like a philosophy club that kind of had that vibe, but it was all in their own heads.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I don't think there was a. I know that there was an honors dorm at Grand Valley, and Erin lived in it, so she was probably part of the. Sneering. Yeah. I don't want to say anything bad about my wife. Never mind. She was probably part of that community at Grand Valley.
Yeah. Well, and again, for us, it's all. I think it's all just kind of a marketing thing, but you know, but it definitely works, and it. And I enjoy those folks a lot. So for the record, I have no beef with the honors community. But yeah, it was an interesting like thing to be a part of. And it occurs to me that like four people sitting on a panel like arguing about Flannery O'Connor, it only happens in academia because there's no real market for that anywhere else. But we do a brisk business in that kind of thing. It was just kind of surreal, dude. It was just kind of like. This probably doesn't happen to you because you're a very like certain, you're very sure of yourself in ways that I admire. But every once in a while, like similar to our character in the story, I'll have these moments where I'm like, wait a minute, this is my life? Kind of like what happened? And like not in a bad way, but just in a, like I'm on a Flannery O'Connor panel, you know, like how did this happen? Because I mentioned that I like Ethan Hawke. Oh, dude, I'm burying the lead. I had an argument at dinner about First Reformed.
Oh, buddy, with someone who was holier than thou via their intellect, and their taste in cultural. Oh my gosh, dude, yeah, tell me all about it. Blow for blow.
So, here's what happened. So we're all in this little private dining room off the main dining room at our cafeteria. And we're all kind of like going around the table talking about what our interest is in Wildcat. And it's all these like kind of Catholic Flannery O'Connor scholars and then me. And so the guy who arranged the panel, who's a great dude, he was kind of like, yeah, Ted's here because he's a film guy. You know, he's making some movies and he's a big Ethan Hawke fan. And the people around the table were like, oh, what Ethan Hawke movies do you like? And I was like, oh, I love, you know, Before Sunrise and Gattaca and Reality Bites. And I'm kind of ripping through them. And somebody at the table was like, what did you think of First Reformed? And I glanced at my wife. She glanced at me. We got all of our glancing in. And I paused for a beat and I was like, I got to be honest with you. I think it sucked. And moreover, I think it was one of the most unintentionally hilarious things I've ever seen in my life. Dude, I literally said verbatim those things. Because I couldn't not.
Yeah.
I couldn't do the like demure academic, well, kind of, you know, sort of.
You wouldn't have been able to look yourself in the mirror when you were shaving the next day.
I wouldn't have, dude.
You would have had to wrap yourself in barbed wire, buddy.
Exactly. I would have had to wrap myself in barbed wire, you know, as I returned home that night. So, yeah. So I was like, I think it sucked and was unintentionally hilarious. And the guy that I was sitting next to, who's also a good dude, but a retired prof from my school, he's been retired for a few years. He was like, well, he's like, okay. He goes, make your case. And I looked at him and I go, two words, erotic levitation. And I was like, I got to be honest with you, Raj. His name's Roger. I was like, when they gaze deeply into each other's eyes, and then ended up erotically levitating over like piles of garbage. I was out. I was like, that's where it lost me, you know. And he was kind of like, yeah, I get that.
Oh man.
Dude, it was such a great moment and I wished you were there and I can't believe it took me like 42 minutes into this podcast to remember that. And then, dude, a thing happened that I'm not proud of, but it happens to me sometimes. And you've seen this happen. You've been in the room with me as this was happening. Like, I get sort of in the groove of being funny. And then I just keep going.
Dude, if I'm there, so, I'm pouring gas on that fire left and right.
Oh, dude, yeah.
It's magic.
Are pouring gasoline on it.
Yeah.
You're, like, walking away with a Zippo lighter and, like, flicking it into the pool of gasoline. So I said all that stuff about the erotic levitation. And then, dude, I let there be a beat in the conversation. And I fired off my joke about, like, what happens 20 minutes after the yes. film ends. My joke about, like, hey, who's hungry? Who wants to grab a bite after I
I've only got four more barbs to remove from you. Then what?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know how you are, but in my mind's eye, and you're a dad of a boy, and I'm a dad of a boy, like, I spent a lot of years like digging like splinters and slivers out of like body parts of my boys. I imagine him like picking the barbs out in like the self same way, you know, like he's got some tweezers and some hydrogen peroxide there and, you know, he gets all the barbs out and he's like, well, you know, who wants to go grab a bite?
And you know that during the whole process, as she's helping him with this, she had to at least once been like, what are you thinking? Like,
yeah, exactly. Right.
How did you see this playing out, sir?
Exactly. Dude, so I made that joke, and by that time, like, the room was on board.
Yes.
And that joke kind of killed, dude. So I don't know if I convinced them that First Reformed was terrible, but I definitely, like, fired off our jokes about it and got the room on board.
Now, did anyone discuss the even, well, possibly worse, possibly equally bad Ethan Hawke 90s classic Dead Poets Society? Are they like,
dude,
sophomoric enough to think that's good?
Probably. I hate myself for not bringing that up, because when they ask me what are your favorite Ethan Hawke movies, of course I didn't mention that because I hate it. And dude, I should have brought it up for the comedic potential, though. That would have been amazing. I'm guessing, given who was around the table, they all love Dead Poets Society. because in the self-same way that like Paul Schrader made First Reformed, it was somebody impressive that made Dead Poets Society. Even though we hate the movie, it was somebody with like a name like that. And I'm blanking on who it was. But, you know, it's somebody that if you're in those academic settings and you're kind of trying to like flaunt it a little bit, you're feeling good about, like, you know, whoever made Dead Poets Society. So no, we didn't even get into all that, and I wish we had, dude. I really wish we had.
You know who directed it, dude? Peter Weir, I said. It's Peter Weir.
Peter Weir.
Peter Weir.
Peter Weir. Cousin of Brett Weir. Dude, what if we did this whole thing, and this is me just pulling on the string of, like, absolutely unmarketable gut check projects that would become an absolute waste of a black hole of time and generate
never
no
heard
money.
Of it.
I want to make a fake IMDb for Peter Weir's brother, Brett Weir. I wonder what kind of stuff would be on his IMDb, you know?
There's a piece, like, called The Super Across the Way.
The Super from Across the Way. That's like his art piece, you know? But then, like, he made his living directing, like, a couple episodes of Burn Notice. And, you know, Brett Weir's IMDb is all over the place. You know?
Yeah, he did, like, Two and a Half Men... yeah, he was like the second, what do you call that? The
key grip. Yeah.
No, what do you call, like, the second unit director or whatever, like doing just,
yeah,
just
second unit director. Yeah.
Crowd
yeah.
things or
doing
something.
Pickup shots and stuff. Yeah. 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 Oh, I love it.
Brett Weir. Yeah. Peter Weir.
Peter Weir and Brett Weir, they're estranged. You know, the relationship's strained.
Well, it's always straining when one person does so much better than the other, you know?
Yeah. So Peter Weir does all the, like, critical successes, but Brett Weir's doing really well commercially, like financially.
Yeah. Well, and he's got like 1,900 followers on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, this thing's writing itself.
Speaking of which, we should also take some digs at AI any chance that comes up in we didn't say the name of our new piece that we're writing, the novel / radio theater or whatever we're doing, and it's called, I'll let you say it, Ted.
Newspaper Man.
Oh, I love that. I very much love
I
that.
I love it too, dude.
There's nothing named too. That other than one, like, I published this in my basement in one afternoon, like, Kindle book on Amazon, so dude, we're in the clear.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing out there called Newspaper Man.
I think there's, like, also the biography of someone minor, and it's like a 17-year-old book or something. There's nothing that pops, nothing that's really competition that would be confused with it.
Dude, that's crazy. That's so wild to me, but awesome. No, I love this, man. We are planting our flag on this corner. I love the idea of, like, you and me doing kind of old-timey, like, RKO radio theater. Yeah, I'm into this. I'm so into it. It's going to be great.
So also, we got to get a lot of like different settings and different sounds, different things happening so that I can kind of stretch myself and sharpen my chops here on the audio side. Yeah. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think that Re-Raptured was one thing. This is the next evolution of it. This is the next generation of it.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, no, it's going to be great, dude. And you have, like, a cache of sound effects and stuff that you can use?
I have thousands and thousands of them, and I also have, I mean, this is kind of ironic, but I also have a subscription to a really great service where you use kind of an AI engine along with sound effects to create ambiances and, like, you know, you record 3 or 4 footsteps, and then you make the, you know, 20-minute hike sound effects in the computer. You go to the computer, so it's really cool. Yeah, and you can make, you know, I've got a bunch of different, you know, drones and cinematics and all sorts of different stuff that I haven't really been able to use because I've been acquiring most of it for the Pilgrim's Progress, which, by the way, the second season is going to start in early November. So everybody, make sure you didn't unsubscribe. But it's 17th That's right. century, late 17th century. So, like, I've got guns and bombs and explosions. I've got cars screeching. I've got everything. And I've been able to use a little bit of it, you know, in the last con and stuff. But, like, not as much as I'd like to. I really want to do more with that.
Oh, dude, this is going to be so much fun.
City streets, you know, the sound of...
City streets, yeah.
I want to keep cutting back to Chicago, maybe, and this just occurred to me, too, maybe something from his old life sort of follows him during one of the arcs, story arcs, to the new town, so we have some corruption going on in skyscrapers over here, and then it, you know, feet trickles down. We need a name for the town. I think... I think it should be on the Michigan-Indiana border, right?
Okay, I like that. I mean,
Michigan City is there, but it's too big probably. Maybe we make a fictional town?
We could make a fictional town. Yeah, and I like Michigan-Indiana border because that allows us both to sort of lean on, you know, our respective experiences as Michiganders and Indiana residents, Hoosiers. So, no, I love it. Yeah, maybe fictional town. Although, let me look at a map, Zach. Maybe there's a town with just kind of a, like a perfect name up along that way that we could lean on, you know?
Although I do like, I don't want to have to like be tied to what's really in a town and what it feels like.
What's
there.
Really in a town.
If I describe like Essexville, Hampton, you know, the Hampton part that's a little bit more, you know, in the sticks, and you describe Hartford City, and that pastiche of the two is just this town, you know?
Yeah, I think we need to make a fictional town. Yeah, that way we're not tied to anything. So
could be Hartford City, Michigan.
Oh.
And it's just over the border to the north.
Just over the border to the north. Ooh, I like that. Yeah, let's give that a think. But Hartford City, Michigan. It sounds like a real thing. I like that. Yeah, let's chew on it. That could be good for sure.
Nice. Well, dude, it's about that time.
It's about that time. We've done what we always do in that we have wandered to and fro throughout an academic panel discussion, some Sherlock Holmes sleuthing content,
Peter Weir,
and a new project. Peter Weir, Brett Weir's IMDb, which I'm for sure going to write later on.
Get Brett Weir, I said!
And we will see you.
Saul Rosenberg.
Saul Rosenberg. It's tearing the end.
Please use the proper terminology, sir.
That's right.
Next time.